At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Governor Greg Abbott has ordered a criminal investigation into claims that former Dr. Larry Nassar abused some of his victims at the Caroli Ranch. That's a facility near Huntsville that was the training ground for U.S. women's gymnastics. Abbott ordered the Texas Rangers, the state's top criminal investigations unit, to look into the matter. The Walker County Sheriff's Office is already investigating. Several gymnasts have said Nassar abused them at the ranch. Nassar was sentenced to 40 to 175 years in prison last week. More than 150 women and girls have said he had molested them under the guise of medical treatment. The governor calls the allegations gut-wrenching. If you're planning to cast a ballot in the upcoming Texas primaries, the deadline to register to vote is coming up. It's Monday. Sam Taylor is a spokesperson for the Texas Secretary of State's office. He said in 2016, there were about 15.1 million registered voters in Texas. As of the end of last week, there are over 15.2 million.
And so we can expect that number to go up a little bit as we approach the February 5th deadline. But it's safe to say that we'll have at least 100,000 more registered voters in Texas this year for the primaries than we did in November of 2016.
If you're not registered or have moved within Texas, you'll need to register by mail or in person at a county office by Monday. Early voting starts February 20th. Election day is March 6th. Wondering whether you've already registered to vote? We have a link at keranews.org. Dallas County today reported three more flu deaths. That brings the county's total to 52 this season. Across North Texas, more than 70 deaths have been reported. We're in the middle of a flu epidemic with more than 2,300 deaths in Texas. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with Dr. Jonathan Quick about how we can better prepare for future outbreaks of the flu, Zika, and other viruses.
We need a so-called universal flu vaccine that will get all strains of influenza. There are at least a half a dozen potential pandemic threats, including SARS and related viruses, for which we don't have an effective vaccine. Our ways of controlling the Aedes aegypti mosquito are not particularly effective. And the other thing is, in terms of the innovation part of this, is an early warning system. Since we started 50 years ago developing our weather warning for hurricanes, the deaths from hurricanes have gone down 95%. And the last bit is to have ready emergency response so that we don't have to wait days or weeks in order to get the emergency support out there. Nobody would tolerate a fire department where you call and you say you got a fire and they say, well, you know, we're out of budget this week. We'll come back next week. But that's what we do with these outbreaks.
Jonathan Quick is the author of The End of Epidemics, The Looming Threat to Humanity and How to Stop It. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you could subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. On Tuesdays, KERA's One Crisis Away project looks at life on the financial edge. Today, a study that examines the link between hunger and bullying. Researchers at the North Texas Food Bank wanted to find out if kids who are food insecure were more likely to be bullied than kids who got enough to eat. Courtney Collins sat down with Government Relations Director Valerie Hawthorne to talk about the results.
Valerie Hawthorne, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Before we talk about what this research uncovered, let's talk about the study. Was it done here in North Texas?
Absolutely. It was done here in Dallas County. It focused in DISD schools. It's actually a conglomeration of five different studies that have all come together and formed the same conclusion.
Can you define food insecurity for us?
To first understand food insecurity, you have to understand food security. So food security is what many of us have the privilege of having, where we don't ever have to worry about where our next meal is coming from. We know that there'll be food in the refrigerator when we get home, or we have the means in our pocketbook to go and get food whenever we need it. Food insecurity is on the other hand. This is a condition in which people don't know where their next meal is going to come from, or they don't have the means or the availability, which is just as important, to get nutritious food.
How is food insecurity defined for the sake of this research? How did you guys determine what students were food insecure?
In one of the five experiments, it was defined as the USDA's survey on food insecurity. In the other studies, there's a survey called the Child Food Insecurity Brief Behavioral Scale, in which teachers assessed behavior of children that they thought may be food insecure. These behaviors range anywhere from hoarding of food, constantly asking, when are we going to eat again? When is lunch? Or stealing food from their classmates or peers.
So what did the study show? Are kids who are chronically hungry more likely to be bullied?
Absolutely. Kids that are suffering from food insecurity are more likely to be bullied. Bullies like to pick on peers that are going to respond. And so the child in the classroom that's more happy and satisfied and calm in their life is not going to be an attractive target for a bully. The child that's already on edge and already may have some issues going on is a real attractive target because they're going to respond. They're going to hit back. And that's why they tend to be more bullied.
And I understand the food insecure students were also more likely to be bullies themselves. Why is that?
You first have to understand bullies and bullying behavior. Most of it does come out of insecurity, even social or emotional insecurity, as well as just aggression. And we know that when we are hungry as adults, we tend to be a little shorter than everybody, and we tend to have a little bit more of a temper. And children have a harder time controlling that. Hunger is such a complex problem. It's basically a symptom of poverty is what we see. And we do know that low-income households do tend to have more aggressive behavior within the households. So that is just another layer on this very complex cake of what is going on in the minds of these children that are food insecure.
Now, one of these experiments actually compared a group of food insecure kids sent home over the weekend with backpacks full of food to a group of food insecure kids not getting backpacks. What did researchers find in terms of behavior for those two groups of students?
What teachers did was measure their aggressive behavior, either verbally or socially, any type of behavior that could be construed as being a bully or being a victim of a bully. They measured this in the fall and then measured it again in the spring. And what we found is that children that received that food to take home on the weekends were actually less aggressive in the spring. And this carried over through time, showing that these intervention strategies were actually having an impact on these children's social behavior in their schools.
Why undertake this kind of research? What do these results say about the realities hungry kids are living with?
You can't just give a child food one day and expect that the issues that are going on inside of them or inside of their household are going to improve. I think that these results could be striking because oftentimes the picture we have of a child that isn't getting enough nutrition is a picture of weakness, being the quiet one in the classroom, when in fact that may not be the case. And this can help teachers identify which children in their classroom are actually suffering from food insecurity at home.
Valerie Hawthorne, Government Relations Director with the North Texas Food Bank. Thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely. Love to be here.
And get ready for the super blue blood moon tomorrow morning. It's kind of a rare lunar trifecta. We'll see a blue moon, a super moon, and a total lunar eclipse. If you want to get a glimpse in North Texas, the partial eclipse begins at 5:48 a.m. and the total eclipse starts at around 6:51. Folks on the West Coast will get a great view of the moon as it enters totality, or the deepest part of the Earth's shadow, during the lunar eclipse. Texans aren't quite as lucky. Judith Reese works at the McDonald Observatory.
The timing is such that it is close to our sunrise and moonset, which is almost the same for a full moon. The sunrise time is the same as the setting time of the moon. It's within a couple of minutes. So we only see the beginning of the totality.
The last time there was a super blue blood moon was in 1982, and there won't be another until 2037. And a programming note, tonight we're carrying NPR special coverage of President Donald Trump's State of the Union address and the Democratic Party response. That begins tonight at 8 here on KER 90.1. You can also watch on KERA TV, and you can follow live annotation by NPR reporters at keranews.org. For the evening, clear skies, low around 43. Tomorrow should be sunny with a high around 72. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.